The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. You can get to this this live stream at our website, thetrumpet.com/live, and you can also submit some feedback. We love hearing from our listeners, our viewers, all around the world. You can reach us, td@kpcg.fm. Well, coming up today in the program, the second segment, we're going to be delving into a study on the spirit of murder. What's the spirit behind all of these murderous acts that we're seeing all over the world? It's just becoming so common, and the Bible has a lot to say about hatred and what it leads to. So we'll look into that in just a bit. But first, we'll roll through the news, and it's really difficult to consume the daily news cycle. In some ways, you just see the relentlessness of Satan the devil. Here we, just Tuesday afternoon, the mob gets everything that it was aiming for, as I said yesterday. Guilty on all three counts. It's manslaughter and murder, whatever that means. It's both. But it gets all three counts. And then, happening right at the same time, you have this other incident in Columbus. And now the mob is riled up and saying, we're gonna burn Columbus down. We've got another George Floyd. It's this 16-year-old girl, Micaiah, forget her last name. It's in my notes here somewhere. And I'll come to this in just a second, but I had Richard just pull together some of the things we've written, some of the things my father has said on the Key of David over the years. And really, what we're seeing now, the trumpet really has prepared you for this, and it certainly does highlight the fact that Satan the devil's been cast down to this earth. You talk about the spirit of murder and who's behind it all. That would be the devil. That would be our adversary. That would be the God of this world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. It says in Revelation 12 that he's deceived the whole world. My father had an article back in 2015. About the prophecy in Isaiah 1, our cities being burned with fire. And he said in that piece, again, this goes back 6 years, it was at thetrumpet.com, it says, accusations of police racism are heightening public mistrust of law enforcement and fueling a trend of violent race-related incidents and lawlessness. It says, anger among certain high-profile segments of the black population in particular is growing and is boiling over in rioting and violence with increasing frequency in American cities. And as he said in that article and in many other articles like it over the years, your Bible prophesies that it's just going to get worse. It's just going to get worse. Notice what he had to say. This goes back to, let me see here, the Key of David. I believe this is from just last year. If I can find it in my notes, I told the guys I was going to be a little bit disorganized today. Here we are. Clip number 4. This is from a program back actually in 2012. This goes back to 2012. This is my father on the Key of David. Clip 4.
Today we see on television and hear on radio racist remarks just frequently. Now, if you stop and think about that, I mean, they're just flying all over the place. What is just the natural outcome of that? If you're going to use a little psychology here, well, the natural outcome of it is race riots and race wars. I wonder if we know what is really happening in our country and in other countries, but especially the U.S. What is really happening? Is that because Satan has been cast down? Do we understand what is happening on this earth?
Do we understand it? Do we see what's really happening? He talked in that program, as you just heard there, about the cause, root causes. Satan being cast down. This is from a coworker letter at that same time, December 5th, 2012. And my father said, those in the radical left know that they have a huge army of white and mostly non-white supporters that they could ignite into race riots and race wars. They know this. They know they have an army. They know there's an army of social justice warriors out there, and they're ready to fight. They're ready to bring violence, and they're admitting it. They're admitting it. As I said, it's coming even straight from the top. It's coming from Joe Biden, who's saying the protests, they've worked. The protests have brought people together of all races and generations. It's brought peace. Peace, peace, they say. Even as there's violence and war all around us. And now the mob threatens more violence in Columbus. It's coming to a city near you. The protests are working. That's what they're on TV saying. Listen to what Van Jones said. Yeah, he's the commentator over at CNN or MSNBC, one of the two. And he's telling the world, hey, what you did, the mob, last summer, it worked perfectly. Listen to this, clip 5.
This was not the system working. This was people making the system work. That's the key. You can tell the young people now, voting matters. The protesting worked. You can tell young people, marching matters. And the truth, the fact that people got involved with their video cameras and captured it, citizen engagement matters. So there's a formula now that you can begin to show people we can make the system work for change. That's what's new.
That's what's new. The formula now, if we take to the streets, and even if it kills 30 to 40 people, even if 30 to 40 people are murdered, even if all of these businesses are destroyed in the inner city, many of them black owned, even if there's all this collateral damage, we can affect change. We can bring about change. It's worth it. In other words, rioting and anarchy. This is bringing about what we've hoped for so many years. That's the message. Listen to this Black Lives Matter activist, Kim Brown, clip 6.
Support all that. I support them looting the Dollar Tree. I support the looting of what other did they loot? Like the Advanced Auto Parts. I remember last year they looted Target. I support all that. Loot all that. Do you know why? Because black people and marginalized and oppressed people could loot every store in this whole country for 200 years and would not even come close to the debt that America owes us.
So in other words, as I was saying yesterday, nothing will satisfy them. Nothing will appease the mob. And they're on a roll right now. They're claiming one victory after another. So this is not something that's going to be tamped down. It's gathering steam. It's gaining momentum. And you have people like you just heard there spewing out that kind of hatred on television every single night, every day. Listen to this activist from Minneapolis, clip 7.
We're never going to be satisfied. Black Lives Matter isn't a trend, it's a movement. Black Lives Matter forever, okay? So we're not going to stop just because we got one conviction. We're happy with the conviction, but we're going to keep going. We're going to go for Dante Wright, we're Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and so many unnamed faces out there that is just going so many. This is a black genocide. We're out here for more people, not just this one. This is more than one case. We're not satisfied.
It's a black genocide. You see, the police, they're trying to kill off an entire race. So we're not satisfied, says this protester. And then the media, of course, not standing on the sidelines by any means. They're actively engaged in this movement. They're not satisfied either. And were it not for the fact that the Columbus Police Department released the video footage of what actually happened on Tuesday, the officer shooting that knife-wielding teenager, the story would be very different. It would be very different today. In fact, they before the footage, in just the split second before the footage was released, the headlines were already, they were already being churned out. The Daily Beast. The Daily Beast, it says, it quoted a witness. One of the witnesses there, Micaiah, had already dropped the knife in the yard, but police shot her four times without any warning, says a witness. And that's right there in the Daily Beast piece. And then we come to find out, no, she had the knife. She had her arm cocked back, and she was prepared to kill this woman. This other woman. This black woman. Apparently, her life, though, doesn't matter. This is the way you have to play the game. Her life doesn't matter. The only one that matters is the killer. Because there was a white police officer involved. Everyone is Derek Chauvin. Everyone who's white is Derek Chauvin. Listen to this. This is put out by CBS. This is a radical leftist propagandist. This is a revolutionary. And CBS, they're promoting his message. I'm not sure how to pronounce the man's name, but listen to clip 8.
So now what? Chauvin is headed to jail, but is America headed to justice? Is justice convicting a police officer, or is justice convicting America? When tens of millions of Americans after Floyd's murder last year took to the streets of nearly every American town, we were convicting America.
It's America, you see, that needs to be convicted. This is one police officer who used excessive force, and now it's all of America that must be convicted. Listen to the next clip. This is clip 9.
It is easy to just blame individual officers like Derek Chauvin, but the problem is structural. The problem is historic. The problem is every single American who sees George Floyd and Breonna Taylor as dangerous, rather than the policies that led to health disparities, under-resourced schools, disproportionate black poverty and unemployment, and few resources for all of us suffering from drug abuse, from mental illnesses, from despair.
So it's the whole system. It's the structure of the United States of America. And that's why the Marxist movement has to bring the entire system down. This is exactly what Herbert Armstrong prophesied, going back to the 1950s and 60s. The communist infiltration. It's here. They're winning the war. One last clip from CBS, clip 10.
Justice is not closing a case. Justice is not closing the cell door on Chauvin. Justice is closing the door on racist narratives and policies that endangered Floyd, that still endangers black people, that endangers America. Justice is opening the door to an anti-racist future where American fear is endangered, where I no longer live in fear, where Americans no longer live in fear of me. Justice has convicted America.
Justice has convicted America, he says. Thank you, CBS. CBS probably sees that as a public service announcement. They're putting it out there in the black community. Not all of them. Some of them understand what's happening here. Some of them know that we're all being lied to. Some of them know that this is all propaganda. But a lot of them in the black community, Amy Horowitz, I'll play some clips from his video if we have time. But he's on the streets of Minneapolis just talking to members of the black community. And they believe it. They believe there's a genocide happening. They believe that the justice system should just be abolished. They believe that law enforcement should be abolished. They believe in street justice. They believe in anarchy and lawlessness. And I guess they believe that if a 16-year-old girl, and really, this is a big girl who had a knife in her hand. This is not some little, tiny 8-year-old we're talking about. I guess she's supposed to just kill the other woman and the police should just stand there. How long before the police just say, you know what? I don't even want to show up for this call. And by the way, somebody that was witnessing the melee, somebody called for the police to intervene. Somebody called 911 and said, this is out of control. Help us. And so he comes and they're wrestling, they're fighting. She uses a knife to go after another person. Then she's got this girl pinned to a vehicle, a car, leaning back. And the arm is cocked, as I say. It's either heading for the chest or the neck. And so the police officer did what just maybe 2 years ago, a year ago, would have been seen as a heroic deed. But not today, not now, not in this climate. Now he's suspended, now they want his head. The mob wants justice. Justice for Micaiah. Listen to Micaiah's mother, and this was pretty soon after the incident, clip 15.
Micaiah was named after a male prophet in the Bible. She was a very loving, peaceful little girl. She was 16 years old. She was an honor roll student. And Micaiah had a motherly nature about her. She promoted peace.
Wow. She promoted peace, says the mom that Micaiah evidently wasn't living with. And you never hear about the father, of course, in these cases. This, she's named after a prophet, after all. And there she is, taking a knife to the girl in pink. And, of course, Al Sharpton, he's on the way. Ben Crump, the famous attorney, all the race baiters, they're en route. The next stop on inflaming hatred. Rioting, murder. Well, that would be Ohio. Columbus, Ohio. Valerie Jarrett. She's the top aide or one of them for Barack Obama. She tweeted out, a black teenage girl named Micaiah Bryant was killed because a police officer immediately decided to shoot her multiple times in order to break up a knife fight. Demand accountability. And this was not a knife fight. This was one woman with a knife that was about to kill another woman. The other woman didn't have a knife. And there's people actually tweeting out that, look, this kind of thing happens all the time. Why should the police intervene? I mean, a knife here, a knife there. What is happening to the United States of America? What is happening to our thinking? As I say, not that long ago, This police officer would have been praised for saving a black life. LeBron James, he tweets out a picture of this police officer and says, you're next. How many followers does LeBron have? Tens of millions of followers. And he sends out a threat via Twitter saying, we're coming after you, officer. We want justice. That's right, he puts a little hourglass emoji next to his statement, his provocative statement. But that's no problem to Jack Dorsey or anyone else that runs the social media platforms. It's no problem. He's woke, you see. He's woke. Dorsey's woke. Zuckerberg, they're all woke. So you can say whatever you want. Pour fuel on the fire. You're next, he tweets. Sean Davis tweeted in response, nothing to see here, just the Chinese Communist Party's favorite illiterate apparatchik trying to incite the assassination of a police officer who saved a girl from being stabbed to death. He's exactly right. He's absolutely right. You know, not that long ago, someone like LeBron James, for saying something like that, he'd be banned. He'd be arrested. but not in this climate. My father wrote back in 1992. This is following the Los Angeles riots. He had an article, Only the Beginning. The LA riots, only the beginning. He wrote that almost 30 years ago. That's pretty prescient. He talked there in that article about the Ezekiel 5 prophecy, and he said that this kind of violence and mayhem, it's going to spread to other Israelite nations. It's not just spreading across America. It's going to hit all of Israel. Following the O.J. Simpson trial, this is back in the mid-1990s, my father said, the Los Angeles rioting in 1992 is just a type of what is going to happen to major cities in the whole nation. It's a stark prophecy of our future. The government has lost control. There's a breakdown of law and order. Government authorities asked black sports stars and other leading blacks to plead with their people to stop the LA rioting in 1992. So this goes back 30 years, and as my father's reporting there, you had government authorities that were at least trying to stop it, or at least pleading for celebrities to help stop it. Today, just to give you one example of where we are today, the government authorities are encouraging it. The black sports stars and celebrities are encouraging it. They're encouraging you to go after the police. You're next, officer. You are next. Says probably one of the most recognizable athletes in the world. This is where we are today. My father said that appears to be their main hope for peace. How pathetic. There was virtually no show of governmental force. See, that was a little preview of things to come, what happened back in 1992. And those of us old enough to remember that, I mean, that was horrific. A lot of people at that time had never, those that weren't alive around in the 60s, had never seen anything like it. And now look at what we're seeing. It's nonstop. It's not just one, you know, 3 or 4 day period with one city in a state of unrest. It's city after city after city. You just got to find an incident. Even if it's a killer about to murder someone, we can frame that somehow and make the police look bad, can't we? Can't we turn this into a racial thing? This was black on black crime. And a police officer called to the scene because somebody there wanted help. Somebody did. Can't help them, I guess. I mean, this is about to explode. The violence and the murder, the homicide rates, it's already exploding. And when you think about the propaganda that so many people in the black community are consuming, it's what is it building toward? It's building toward what my father was writing about back in 1992. Look at this Ami Horowitz video. He produced a short video yesterday, I think 3 minutes. And he's, as I say, he was on the scene in Minneapolis last summer when they were burning down the city. And he returned this week to just get some, to just try to get into the thinking of the black community there. This is clip 11.
Would you condemn people who say we want to burn the city down?
Absolutely not. That might not be something that I end up doing, but I understand that rage as a black person.
Do not do that.
No.
Do you support why they would do that?
Yeah.
Okay. You can burn the whole city down. What does it matter?
So I say burn the city down, you know, so they can see that we're here, continue the movement.
Do you think the city's going to burn down?
Yes, absolutely.
No question about it?
No. And that'll be the least of our problems.
By burning all the city down, we'll teach them a lesson?
I think, honestly, I'm all for burning it down.
Should we eliminate the judicial system completely?
Should we eliminate it completely? I'm going to go ahead and give you the flat right answer of yes.
the judicial system, and should it be eradicated?
Yes.
Since we know what Chauvin did to George Floyd, should we have dispensed the trials? We're not going to have a trial.
Yeah.
Let's just convict him right now.
Yeah.
There shouldn't even be a trial. He should be convicted just as is.
Chauvin got off. Would you support street justice on him?
Yes.
There's a small sampling, admittedly, but those are some pretty frightening ideas that these people are holding to. And why do they believe this? Do away with due process, do away with the judicial system. Street justice, that's fine. He doesn't deserve a trial. And by the way, burn down the city. Why not? I presume these people live in that city. Burn it down. Burn down our own city. We've got to do it for justice. It doesn't matter how many people are hurt or even killed in the process. There's a satanic spirit behind this, as one of the earlier clips said, this movement. And that spirit is strong. Listen to clip 12.
How many unarmed black people were killed by cops last year? You have any idea?
100 plus? In just Minnesota?
No, around the country.
Oh, thousands.
Unarmed black people.
Thousands.
It seems like they're trying to erase, destruct the whole race of, the African-American race.
Would you consider this a genocide? It's the eradication of an entire people.
That's a good question, and now that I've been confronted with it, I'm going to go ahead and say it.
I mean, genocide means, the targeting of one race for its destruction. Do you think that's what they're doing?
Genocide of anybody that's not white.
Would you call what's happening a genocide?
Yeah, I think that's one word for it.
Genocide?
Yes, most definitely.
A genocide?
Yeah.
They're all in agreement, at least the ones he interviewed. It's a genocide. How many unarmed black people were killed by law enforcement last year? 18, as you saw there on the video. And yet these are people who are convinced it's happening to thousands, that there are thousands, perhaps millions of victims. That's what a genocide is. This is the way they view the United States of America. Listen to the last segment from his video, clip 13.
We need another civil war in this country in order for us to have true justice.
If that's what it takes, then we have to do it.
Do we need another civil war now?
If that's what it takes, then I believe so. If that's what it's going to take to revamp everything, for everything to be equal, at least equal, for us to have justice, I believe so.
Will it happen? Probably.
What percent of this country are white supremacists?
Say most of the country. I can't give you a number, but
You say majority of the country.
Yeah.
Should we just gather up the white supremacists and do street justice?
That would be ideal. Again, I'm not going to say anything that would directly incriminate me, but I would say that would be a good idea.
I don't want to say we need to go start killing all white folks, but it's
maybe
they need to feel the pain and the hurt.
Feel the same pain that we feeling. Feel the hurt that you putting out. Get that back and see how it feels.
So maybe they do need to feel the pain that we've been feeling for years.
Maybe we do need a civil war. Maybe we do need to kill white people. That's just ordinary citizens of the United States in Minneapolis. Now, when we talked in the trumpet years ago, 15, 20, 25 years ago, about a coming civil war, it may have seemed far-fetched at the time, but look at the climate that we're in today. Daniel Horowitz had an article at The Blaze just yesterday. The reason that this stood out to us is because it's coming from a conservative. Now, you know what AOC thinks. You know what Chuck Schumer thinks and Nancy Pelosi and the mayor of Minneapolis. They defund the police. We've got to reimagine law enforcement. We've got to take away their guns. We've got to get rid of these weapons that the police are using because they're killing so many black people. You know what the radical left is saying. You know how that they want to federalize law enforcement. And in fact, they talk about doing away with law enforcement. And one point that Horowitz makes in his piece is they don't want to do away with it. They want to control it so that they can impose their agenda on the entire nation. This is Daniel Horowitz, who's a conservative, and his article is Why I'm Now in Favor of Abolishing Police. Just the headline alone, can you believe this? Why I'm in favor of abolishing the police? He says the KKK would be proud. Their version of street justice and terrorizing jurors with threats worked splendidly in the Chauvin trial. Now that we only have mob rule, why even have police who can only be used against we the people, but not to defend us? So his point is that, look, if the police are just going to go after, you know, Trump supporters for trespassing and then not defend us, and not defend us when the mob comes and burns down our cities and destroys our businesses, what good are they? What purpose are they serving? So now you've got it from both sides. You've got the radical left and you've got the conservatives. They're saying, look, is law enforcement really helping here? Where is this leading? Well, again, I refer you to the many articles and Key of David's by my father over the years, and to the many prophecies of God. It says famed Harvard, well, he quotes from Alan Dershowitz, who was the one that said on TV the other night that these tactics, you know, Maxine Waters and the mob surrounding the courtroom and such, that this is straight out of the KKK book from the 1920s and 30s. Horowitz says, we no longer have individual justice in America. We have mob rule incited by the system in pursuit of transformational political agenda. Further on, he says, no serious person can believe that any sane juror would have placed principle over his own life and judged the evidence in this case properly. It says, with the media, the president, and every state official gunning for a guilty verdict under the threat of doxing individual jurors, the outcome here was never in doubt. That should disturb us all, because this is not just about cops. It's about being on the wrong side of our two-tiered mob justice system. He says, it's the same reason why violent criminals are released without bail, while January 6 protesters who didn't even commit a violent felony are held without bail. So on the one hand, you have a so-called justice system releasing violent criminals into the streets. And on the other hand, you have nonviolent trespassers who are still in jail. They're still in jail. He says, in fact, the mob lynching of motorists at the hands of BLM is emblematic of why this is about so much more than the cops. Henceforth, the cops will sit back passively and not respond to volatile situations. That will precipitate a cascading cause and effect of violent criminals remaining on the streets even longer and becoming more emboldened to commit violence. It says now, rather than the police being the first ones to interact with those criminals, guess who will do the heavy lifting? The civilians. So basically what he's saying is get your guns and protect yourself. What he's saying is it's every man for himself. In a nation of 330 million people with more guns than people, what good is law enforcement if there's this two-tiered standard of justice? What good is law enforcement if it's mob rule? What good are the police if they're stepping aside, giving space to the rioters to destroy? This is a conservative voice, a fairly prominent one. How many other conservatives think this way? This is dangerous. This is a ticking time bomb. He says, believe me, I have no interest in anarchy. I want ordered liberty. But if the only option on the menu is anarchy for one side of the justice system, then by all means, let's have complete anarchy for everyone. If they're getting away with anarchy on the other side, then, you know, we might as well join them. It says, once the cops and the justice system will no longer punish and deter violent criminals and accept BLM as the rulers of our streets, then the only remaining function the police will serve is to arrest us when we are forced into a self-defense situation against BLM. It says, finally, the reality is that they don't want the police, well, he's talking about the radical left making that point, they don't want the police abolished. They want police repurposed to enforce their own tyranny. So he goes on to say that we need to start working with state legislatures to make sure that they preserve our Second Amendment rights, to make sure that we have the right to self-defense and so on. That's someone who's looking at this as a last resort. Well, what choice do we have? So, like my father said in that clip I played for you, let's just carry this out a few steps ahead. Where is it leading? The message that CBS is putting out there, that these activists are saying on the streets, that now conservative writers are putting forward. Think 2, 3, 4, 5 steps down the road. Where is this leading? It's leading to an explosion of violence, and it's prophesied in Ezekiel 4 and 5. It's prophesied in Isaiah 1. This is what my father's been saying for decades. March of 2012, he wrote, like little children, the radical left makes these hateful statements and doesn't even think of the consequences, which are going to be horrendous. Bible prophecy says so, but even common sense alone should tell us that. He says, this is not President Obama bringing us together, as he pledged to do in his presidential campaign. He's leading the way into violent divisions. And you could say the same thing about the statement from the fake President Biden the other day. This movement, these protests, it's peaceful. It's bringing all generations together. It's bringing all races together, he said. No. No, it's not. Pay attention. Pay attention to what people are saying. Pay attention to what they're writing. Listen to the propaganda as much as you can manage to. And then think about where it's leading. This is my father from just last year on The Key of David, clip 1.
What happens if our policemen are gone? What happens? Well, that means chaos and anarchy, and that means everything just sort of falls apart. And I'll tell you, we have enemies out there, empire enemies, that have been waiting for decades and decades and decades for something like this to happen to America so they can destroy them. And we surely can see that. We have vicious enemies out there. And nobody in this country is going to be a winner in a civil war. I'll tell you that absolutely, and have all kinds of prophecies to back that up.
Everyone loses, in other words. You think a civil war is going to bring justice to the United States, finally? You think a civil war is going to solve our problems? You think we can just kind of go through something like what happened in the 1860s and then dust off the hate, the murderous spirit, and move on? We're not that many steps away for just an absolute free-for-all. Anarchy. Every man for himself. They're writing about it and talking about it. Both sides now. Both sides. And then we're getting these little previews in U.S. cities. Look at what's happened just in the last few months. This is from a program back in 2015. My father said this, clip 3.
But let me give you just a warning that you won't ever hear much about. And you almost never hear it, I think. And that is, if you have problems within, all kinds of problems within, race riots, race problems, anarchy, chaos, and all that, it just makes you very vulnerable to these powerful nations outside, other nations of the world. Just consider Russia and China and radical Islam are just gobbling up the territory of their neighbors, even as I speak. You think they wouldn't attack America if we were weak and divided and hating each other and tearing each other apart? You think they wouldn't? I tell you, history cries aloud that they absolutely would.
Look at how vulnerable we are as a nation because of all of these problems internally, because of all of these problems at home. And what must, as he said there, what must America's traditional enemies be thinking? You think they're really hoping for the best? They're hoping for our downfall. They're eagerly awaiting our demise. They're ready to take over. They're ready to attack. How come you don't see their cities going up in flames? Here it is happening to the United States of America. One last clip from my father's Key of David. This is also from 2015, clip two.
Are you willing, am I willing, to hear what God has to say about burning cities and how to solve the problem? Because he certainly does give us a very clear way to solve those problems. But look, do people really want the truth? Does anybody really seek the truth? Not very many. Not very many people at all. And God warns us that this is the way to prevent suffering. This is the way to prevent all of this chaotic violence that tears everything apart. And what is it going to do to the nation? And what is it going to result in as far as our foreign enemies are concerned when they see what's going on within the nation, as they obviously do? But I'll tell you this. This is a sign, really, of what something that is coming just before the Messiah comes to this earth to rule it.
That's from 2015, again, pointing out just how vulnerable we are because of our problems at home. But yet, too, pointing to the prophecies of God, that it's a sign, that Jesus Christ is about to return to this earth and actually solve the problems that we see all around us. The other day I talked about God's love. God's love motivates everything that he does. He has perfect love. He is love, it says in 1 John 4. Herbert Armstrong said, love is an unselfish, outflowing concern for the good and welfare of the one loved. There's not a lot of that in the world today. An unselfish, outflowing concern for other people. A love for others. God in his law says, thou shalt not murder. And Jesus came along in his ministry and magnified that commandment and said, don't even harbor hatred in your heart. John 8, we talked about the spirit behind all these murderous acts and root causes. John 8 and verse 44, it says, you are of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. He's the father of lies. He's the father of murder. He's the father of hatred. Jesus Christ came as the Lamb of God, slain from the foundation of the world. He sacrificed his life so that we could be forgiven of our many sins, sins of hatred and murder and strife, and bitterness, anger. There's a place for anger in the righteous sense, of course. But what we're seeing on the streets of American cities today, this is the spirit of the devil just whipping people up into a frenzy of hatred. And it's leading to murder in many cases. It's leading to a lot of suffering. Jude verse 11, the little epistle at the end of the New Testament, it says, "Woe unto them, for they've gone the way of Cain." We've gone the way of Cain. What did Cain do? He murdered his brother. He slew his brother. He was jealous. It started with jealousy, then hatred, and then murder. Verse 8 in Jude, it says, "Likewise also these filthy dreamers defile the flesh, despise dominion, and speak evil of dignities." Verse 10, "But these speak evil of those things which they know not, but what they know naturally, as brute beasts. In those things they corrupt themselves." Just treating each other like brute beasts. That's the curse of human nature. A nature void of God's Spirit. A nature without the love of God. You just see a lot of animal-like behavior. You see it in the wild, and you see it in the streets of America. That's been man's history. And in that sense, this is not new, but we're certainly seeing that spirit of hatred intensify in these last days. Second Timothy 3 brings that out. But look for a moment at the 6,000-year history and all of the wars of mankind. Something like 15,000 wars in our history. We've had wars within the last 100 years that have killed tens of millions of people. We have had genocides. That has happened. I mean, there is such a thing as a fake genocide. We heard about that in the first segment. But we've had genocides in memory for many people who remember what has happened in places like Rwanda. Then you go back to the World War era, World Wars I and II. All the people just slaughtered. Your Bible says there's another great tribulation coming, such as was not since the beginning of the world. You think about the worst wars in history. And they can't compare to what's coming. So we've got to be emotionally prepared for these prophecies to be fulfilled. And that, as I said in the first segment, that's what my father's been trying to prepare you for. We need, as I said earlier this week, we need God. We need his help. We need his protection. This is Matthew 23. Notice verse 29. Matthew 23 and verse 29. I don't have my verses in my notes today, so I'm doing it the old-fashioned way. It says, "Woe unto you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchers of the righteous." That's actually earlier on, down in verse 29. Well, yeah, that's right. Verse 30, it says, and say, "If we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets." I mean, if we would have done it so differently. Those people that killed the prophets of old, we would have treated them nicely. And Jesus said, "Oh, really? You think you're pretty righteous? You think you have a lot of love in your heart? You don't. You're harboring hatred and variance." Verse 31 says, "Wherefore you be witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them which kills the prophets." You're the children of them that killed the prophets. You're their offspring. You're acting the same way, in other words. That clip I played for you yesterday. The woman in Portland. What are the children going to think? The children growing up in this community, seeing these places burned down. The sins of the fathers just carries right on down to the next generation. Verse 32, it says, "Fill you up then the measure of your fathers, you serpents, you generation of vipers. How can you escape the damnation of hell?" It says. Verse 34, it says, "Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you shall kill and crucify, and some of them shall you scourge in your synagogues and persecute, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, And it gives the examples, Abel and such. Verse 36, verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. See, you're guilty, in other words. You're guilty. And they were going to eventually crucify Christ, of course. That's the spirit. Matthew 15:19 says, out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, and adulteries. See, it all starts in the heart. I spoke a week or two ago about hypocrisy and how that God wants us to be clean and pure from the inside. He wants our hearts to be right. And the other side of this is that with all this evil that we're seeing, there's a lot of hatred in human hearts today. That's root causes, and I don't have time to get into what Jesus taught in Matthew 5, but you can jot down Matthew 5, verses 21 through 22, and I'll just conclude with this quote. This is from The Plain Truth in 1960. But go through, this is commenting on what Jesus taught in Matthew 5. It says, here murder is traced to its source, hate and anger. Christ declared that if personal anger filled the heart of one of his subjects, such a person is in danger of judgment. If that anger leads a man to have utter derision and contempt for his fellow human being, that man shall be in danger of the council, it says, of God's punishment. It says, if in bitterness and scorn a man shall say to his fellow, you fool, an expression which in the original Greek marked condemnation, such a man shall be in danger of the hellfire, it says. Well, you can continue reading right on through to the end of Matthew 5 and see there where God says that we ought to love our enemies even our enemies. And then, of course, the chapter concludes with the memory verse, become you therefore perfect, even as our Father in heaven is perfect. Well, we're going to cut it just a couple minutes short today as I need to hustle across campus for a forum here in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.